Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the CONCACAF Champions Cup first round, second leg Liga MX review show. My name is Daniel Feuerstein, and thank you very much for listening on tonight as we talk about these matches in the second leg of the CONCACAF Champions League brand new first round. Of course, finishing up the matches involving clubs from Liga MX as well as those clubs from Canada. And it's going to be a fun show tonight, ladies and gentlemen. It's going to be a lot of fun. But let me just say this so far. I have to say that this was probably exciting to watch. Now, obviously, domination, of course. We all know the Liga MX clubs are going to advance. And, you know, you really thought that you were going to see them all advance. And it really wasn't a true clean sweep. But let me just say this, and you know, we'll have on my guests tonight from last Friday, of course. Let me just say this. At least they were competitive, with the exception of Comunicaciones. You saw Real Estelí compete. You saw Forge FC, Hamilton Forge FC, the Canadian Premier League, compete. Real Estelí was competing. And, of course, Herediano was competing against those clubs that represent Liga MX. And, you know, to be fair and to be honest, if not for a certain moment in the first leg for Club America when they got the away goal on the road in second half stoppage time in Nicaragua. I mean, if we're really honest with ourselves here, that could have been done and dusted, or at least maybe sent to penalty kicks in Mexico City. So I'm very happy from what I've seen. I'm not saying that these clubs are not competitive when they're playing in these matches, but you know, and you can tell when they're truly fighting and that they're never going to give up and they're never going to quit. And even though you have to say that with Forge that they were, I mean, basically just bad bounces going into the back of the net for those two goals against them, they never looked out of place. They never, you know, jogged. They never felt, up, it's over, we're down in the aggregate by a lot now, so, you know, there's no way we're going to come back into this one. But they didn't do that. And even though Comunicaciones didn't do that either, I mean, you could tell when those two goals went in the first half. I mean, you're just saying yourselves, okay. And they're probably saying to themselves, okay, just try and save yourself and not get, you know, disgraced and something like that. You don't want to get blown away 7-0 or anything like that, because I know, you know, those were obviously, you know, those types of matches are just absolutely dreadful. And, you know, it drains the life out of the opposition, whether it's the home team or the road team getting it. Still, though, it's a situation where you just hoped and prayed something like that wouldn't happen. And it didn't. And it didn't. And I think that's a great thing to see. You know, when CONCACAF expanded the Champions Cup and renamed it the Champions Cup, you know, for the start of this season, and of course it'll be like this forever and ever and ever now, you know, I'm very happy to see more clubs coming in. Very happy to see these clubs fighting, scratching and clawing to get to that championship final. And, you know, I'm very happy with what Montagliani has done to improve the tournament and to improve this international club championship, because it's just wonderful to watch. And we have to support it because this is in our region. Now, do I think it's going to be as big as the UEFA Champions League or the, you know, the Copa Libertadores? I mean, look, let's be honest with ourselves here. I still think it needs more time to gather themselves and everything, but, you know, honestly, I think that the way everything is all set up, you know, I mean, this is an improvement, and it needs more needs to be done a little bit here. I don't know how much more you can do it, but as of right now, I think they have made it significantly better. Once again, I still believe that the League's Cup has tainted it a little bit, but, you know, I still feel if you still want to give those extra three spots to the, you know, the top three nations from the North Zone of this region, of course, Canada, United States, Mexico, you know, I think a Copa MX champion deserves a spot. I believe the Canadian championship runner-up should get the spot. And I also believe that the U.S. Open Cup runner-up should get the spot. And, you know, just in case that a team does qualify for the Champions Cup through the League's Cup, which, once again, I hate it, but, you know, whatever it is. I think that's probably going off a little bit. But once again, as you all know, I hate League's Cup. I think it's just going away for the situation that we have it. It's just a waste of time. But once again, here's the situation that everyone needs to understand. I think, and we'll get to this on Monday's regular show with Carter Krishnire, but, you know, U.S. Open Cup and the issue that we're having with that, with the MLS trying to get all their teams out of it still, because basically it's just really a pain in the rear end to have MLS interfere with U.S. Soccer's scheduling. And of course, the winner goes to the CONCACAF Champions Cup. Now we're finding out Canadian championship is having the same issues with the clubs in MLS that are Canadian, like Toronto, Vancouver, Montreal. And why is that? Because doesn't the Canadian championship, or the Voyagers Cup, they call it, is also being interfered with by MLS? See, Major League Soccer has to stop interfering with both the Canadian Championship and the Open Cup and just let their clubs play in it, and so be it. Because CONCACAF has already deemed, and they've put their stamp on it, that the Open Cup champion and the Canadian Championship winner must go to the CONCACAF Champions Cup. They must. It's essential. Because CONCACAF deemed it. And, you know, once again, Canada Soccer and U.S. Soccer must come together and put their foot down and once again inform both, well, I shouldn't say both, but at least to inform MLS their clubs must compete. Whether they're from the United States or Canada, they must compete in their respective FA Cup tournaments. So, once again, MLS is interfering with the natural order of things. It is terrible. It is disgusting. And it's got to be stopped. And I really believe that both presidents of each federation should contact MLS, the First Division League, and tell them you can't do this. But for Canada, I think what they need to do is this. And I think that maybe it's time that Toronto FC, CF Montreal, and the Vancouver Whitecaps leave Major League Soccer and just join the Canadian Premier League. I think it's about time. I think it's about time they do this. And I think Canada Soccer should start making arrangements or demands to remove the three Canadian clubs from MLS and put them in the Canadian Premier League. I think it's time. Now, once again, if MLS is going to keep, you know, acting like this, well, both federations must put their foot down. They must. Because if this is interfering with the natural order of things, then that's what it has to be. Major League Soccer has to understand the owners, while they can vote on whatever they want, and it's fine, they are a part of an entire federation, not just the league and that's it. And I really think they have to stop threatening to remove themselves out of the Open Cup. That's what they have to do. And they also have to say, well, you know, if we're, you know, if we keep on doing this, or, you know, there's not going to be soccer here anymore. No, soccer will still be here. It's just that if you disband, you're giving USL the opportunity that they're looking for to make championship a first division league. And they will take over all of the MLS stadiums that you will abandon. Will it come to that? I don't think so. But you know they're going to try and make threats. But once again, we cannot allow certain tournaments that are associated with earning a bid to the CONCACAF Champions Cup. And that's what Major League Soccer is trying to do for both the U.S. and Canada right now. Right now, the dates are set. But right now, there's no draw for the Open Cup. And once again, it's very important that these things do happen to make the CONCACAF Champions Cup what it should be, and at the same time, what the Canadian Championship should be. So Major League Soccer's got to get their rear ends out of their butt, or shall I say their heads out of their rear ends, and to make sure that all this interference never, ever gets brought up again. Because it's just absolutely asinine what Major League Soccer is trying to do, not just for Canadian, for MLS fans in the United States, but for the Canadian fans in MLS up in Canada, holding both federations hostages to get this done. And it has to get done. Excuse me. So all I'm saying is Major League Soccer has to stop interfering with both FA Cup tournaments in the United States and in Canada. It's really time to get this going, and it's time to get this moving. Because those spots are important for not only Canada, but for the U.S. involving themselves in the CONCACAF Champions Cup. So it's going to be exciting and fun, as always. And that we will now talk about some of these second leg matches in the first round of the CONCACAF Champions Cup involving Liga MX and our Canadian friends. Excuse me, and right now, joining us tonight from Away From the Numbers over in Vancouver, British Columbia, the one and only Michael McCall was on, a traditionalist when it comes to the stoppage time clock on the MLS media call on the new initiatives that they're going to involve themselves in 2024. But Michael, welcome back to the show. You know, I thought Vancouver started off very well. I thought they were on the front foot in the entire first half, but unfortunately, the closing 45 was just not that good.
Yeah, they kind of just ran out of a little bit of steam, which is to be expected. They're still really in pre-season mode. This, as important as this tournament is, unfortunately, the timing of it for the Whitecaps has basically meant it's just really been two preseason games, which is not ideal. But they showed so well in that first half down in Monterey, and yeah, just tired legs in the end, but also kind of masters of their own downfall. They had chances, they just did not convert them.
That's the problem, isn't it? The chances that were not converted. I mean, I have to tell you, they had at least several fantastic moments in the first half where I thought they could have been up 1-0 in the match, 2-0 in the match. I mean, I thought I was going to see Brian White convert another chance. I thought I was going to see Krylatch convert a chance. And the one moment where I thought they were going to have a goal, but sadly, the flag went up for offsides.
Yeah, Krylatch was through. Laborda had a couple of chances as well. I mean, they could and should have been leading at the half. Unfortunately, you've got to bury those. And when you're playing a top team like Tigres, your chances down there are going to be limited. I think the Whitecaps probably created more chances than maybe many people expected in that first half. But as good as Brian White has been, he does need maybe 10 opportunities, it feels, sometimes to put the ball in the net once.
Very true. And you know what, though? Even though they converted in the 51st minute from Luis Quiñones' opportunity, I mean, I still felt that the Whitecaps could have gotten something, could have really threatened them. I mean, if they would have gotten that away goal, at least you're looking at penalties if they hold off defensively.
Yeah, the tie hadn't changed that much with the first goal, just aside from, well, a goal for the Whitecaps now, and they're just back on level terms. But you could tell Tigres were clearly worried by that first half performance, because they came out in that second half with more intensity, more aggression, and really had the Whitecaps on the back foot. But they were still very much in it. Fafapiko had a couple of good flashes when he came on. He had this cross, a cross goal that White really should have put away as well. So, I mean, they still had their opportunities, but they were starting to push. They got caught. I don't think the overall 4-1 aggregate scoreline was really reflective of how close the two teams were over the two games, but kind of, it is what it is at the end of it.
Very true. And, you know, give the Whitecaps a lot of credit, because the truth is this. Tigres did not look themselves at all. I think we can both agree that they didn't look themselves at all. I mean, look, I understand coming up to Vancouver, you know, you're playing away. Maybe they're going to do something a little different. It just felt like they were going to try and tiptoe through the tulips against Vancouver, and they were sadly mistaken. And even though they got their away goal by Gignac, and they got lucky that the second goal that was converted was wiped out for offside in Vancouver, I mean, the Whitecaps could have done something in this match, especially in that first half, and the rest of the match as well.
Absolutely. And I think Tigres struggled, and their coach made mention of this in between the two games, that they struggled with how to break down Vancouver. And I think they were probably caught by surprise. And maybe they came into this match kind of thinking, well, they haven't played any games, they're going to be in pre-season form, this is going to be not a stroll in the park, but it's going to be fairly comfortable, and we're confident what we can do at home. But I would say for three halves of that, Tigres would have been very, very worried.
Yep, absolutely, they were. I will say this, though, and not to say, I'm not saying the players were lazy or anything like that on Tigres, definitely not, but you know as well as I do, their past head coach, who won them the Champions League during the COVID year in Orlando, you knew that would never have happened against Vancouver if he was still the head coach over there. You know that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's... And it does kind of fall in the coach. Like, if it took a half-time barracking to get Tigres coming out looking like the Tigres we know, I mean, you've got to ask questions of the players, though, as well. It's like, this is a big tournament. And this was something that annoyed me here, that In some of the fan groups and discussion boards, some of the fans, especially the younger fans, were like, who cares about this tournament? It's a stupid tournament. And I'm like, it is not. This is your gateway to the Club World Cup. And then folk were saying, oh, well, we're never going to win it. And it's like, well, is that the attitude to have? Well, we're not going to win this, so what's the point of playing? So, I mean, the players on Tigres' side, they know what's at the end of this as well. They should be highly motivated because they must surely want a chance to go and play against the Manchester Cities or Real Madrids of the world and showcase their talents and maybe earn a big move over to Europe or something.
I absolutely agree. I mean, listen, you qualified for this tournament for a reason, to show that you're one of the top teams that can attempt to go far. Now, we all know the schematics, why it's happening in February and all that stuff, and you only had two preseason games, and I think that's up. And in my opinion, I'm not saying the Whitecaps should pull an Inter Miami and go on a worldwide, you know, fan fest all over the world and stuff like that, but at least they should have a preseason, at least a couple of games under their belt in preseason just to be prepared and be ready since they were not advancing or at least starting in the round of 16 like the Columbus Crew and Inter Miami are.
Yeah, the seeding really cost Vancouver. I mean, I would argue, and it doesn't matter whether it's Vancouver, whether it's Montreal, whether it's TFC, whether it's another Canadian Premier League team. The Canadian Championship winner should be a seeded team. It's like you've won a national cup competition. So the Whitecaps suffered a little bit from that. They suffered as well because of the way that the draw played out. The TV companies wanted Tigres in the first round of games as the big name team for things as well. So it's not going to get any better. I mean, the MLS season can't really realistically start any earlier than it currently is. Although, I mean, Don Garber did allude in his State of the League call that in 2026, it could start really early with maybe a tournament or something in the likes of maybe Florida. But, I mean, the Whitecaps had four good preseason games over in Spain. And they played European teams that were in mid-season. So they got good tests there. But you were adding players late. Brian White was away with America, so you didn't have that chemistry going. But it's the fitness levels. You've still got... There's a difference between being fit and being match fit. And I think that's what cost the Whitecaps.
That's absolutely correct, Michael. I've said that many, many times. You can be fit. But are you match fit? And that's the big problem right there, once again, that this is hampered a little bit. So after the match, what did Sartini say to the media when this whole thing was over? Was he upset? Was he down? Or did he feel positive that, okay, you didn't get the result, but, you know, you had a positive performance here?
He was fairly positive, but he did right away come out and say, we have to take our chances. We cannot create chances like that and not take them. So overall, he was positive for what this means for the season ahead, but he knows they have to work. There's two things they really have to work on, and he mentioned both, precursor to this game and then in the post game. They've got to take their chances because they are creating, but they've also got to have that consistency as well. And set pieces is something that they've been consistently bad at, and they need to improve because they give goals up. They were the worst in MLS last year for giving up set piece goals, and that's something big that they're definitely trying to work on.
No, absolutely. And hopefully, if they do qualify again through the Canadian Championship, that they will be able to have a better run next year, and hopefully they will be able to do so, and that's what I'd like to see. I'd like to see some of the Canadian teams, you know, do well again, not just, you know, Toronto, but of course for Vancouver and Montreal as well, because it's got to be a little more balanced, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I think as well, the last 2 years, Vancouver's just had a horrible draw, because they've had Tigres this year. Last year, they ran up against LAFC in their second game in the tournament. So, I mean, they've really, really had it tough. And it would have been nice to have a bit of a run. The club really values this this competition, and they want to be in it, and they want to be on the international stage, and they want to try and get to the world stage. So the club do take it seriously, which is why the last 2 years they've gone over to Spain for their pre-season. So fingers crossed they can get into it this year. There's so many mechanisms that would allow them in now, but they definitely want to be there, and I want to see them there.
Absolutely. Michael, just to ask you this question, this popped up recently on X, Twitter, if we still call it that, from True North Foot, Canadian Twitter account for footy. Apparently, Canadian Soccer Association clubs are yet to receive any information, no draw dates, no format, no competition dates, etc., nothing. Canada Soccer has also not been responding to clubs' emails asking for details. Is there an issue right now involving the three MLS clubs from the league interfering with the Canadian Championship, like what they're trying to do to the Open Cup here in the U.S.?
From my knowledge of the situation, no. It's not the league that's been interfering. The CPL teams, and this is unconfirmed, but it was a report that was out there a few weeks ago. The Canadian Premier League clubs put forward a proposal to Canada Soccer, which would have involved the games being two-legged affairs. And basically, the three MLS teams have said, we have not got the capacity to play two-legged games because of the MLS games and the fact that the league shuts down for that month for the League's Cup. So in a way, it is MLS that's affecting it in that the league's shut down. So your windows for playing these games is getting less and less. But two-legged affairs in cup competitions, it's a stupid idea in the modern age. I mean, you described me as a traditionalist at the start. I am, but I'm a very open-minded traditionalist. And like cup football should not be played over two legs. It should be straight knockout. What I'd like to see is the lower seed hosts in every round. So if it's a League One Tier 3 team here, which I was involved in one of those teams last year, we got to host just the way that the draw worked out. And we knocked out a Canadian Premier League team, and it was fantastic. And that's how the Cup should be. It shouldn't be two-legged games. And if that's what the CPL teams are proposing, the MLS teams are quite in the right to say no to that. But the CSA have to be better at communicating. The problem with the CSA just now, though, is they are just in an absolute mess off the pitch. They had appointed a general secretary that then decided the day that she was meant to take the job that she didn't want it anymore. One of their board members, who I have a lot of time for, Dino Rossi, who's really spearheaded the third tier here, he resigned because he said Canada Soccer did not put soccer first anymore. And there's no head coach for the men's team. There's an interim. The other folk have resigned. It's an absolute mess. So this doesn't surprise me in the slightest, but they need to announce it soon because there's some small teams in this that have to get the preparations right. And you can't just suddenly announce, okay, in a month we're going to start the tournament.
Yeah, no, I agree with you there. I mean, I'm glad it's not MLS interfering. Technically, they are sort of with the League's Cup situation. But once again, it's really sad to hear that because, you know, out of all the good that Canada Soccer did the last several years, now it looks like, unfortunately, they're falling back to their old self again, it sounds like.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on there. They really... Everyone needs to sit down and grow the game the way it needs to be grown coming up to 2026. I'm involved in League One here, which I guess is the equivalent probably of USL One for American listeners. And it's growing and it's great and the pathway's there, but the money is not there. And you look at the Canadian youth teams. The Canadian under-17 girls have failed to qualify for the World Cup for the first time ever.
Yeah.
And even at the last World Cup 2 years ago, they didn't even get out of the group stage. So you've got the national team players wanting paid more, but Canada Soccer's like, we can't afford to do that and fund the youth programs. And the youth programs are needing development, things like referee, coaching development. So everyone needs to sit down here, put all the differences aside, and come up with a way to grow the game properly. And it's the same in the US. Like I've always said, the US Open Cup should be cherished. It is a jewel in the crown in North American soccer. It is wildly unappreciated. And if people haven't got time for it, then those people need to not be involved in the decision-making in U.S. soccer.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And well said, my friend. Michael, listen, thanks again for doing this. I know it's a little early, unfortunately, but hopefully if you Vancouver qualifies again, love to have you back next year. Hope to have you back on the show during the season. Have a good night, and thank you again, sir.
Cheers, Dan. Talk soon.
Talk soon. Michael McCall from Away From the Numbers over in Vancouver,
Canada. Once again, ladies
Canada
and gentlemen, welcome back to the conference.
And that's a little early on my end, but once again to Michael, thank you very much for joining me tonight here once again from Away From the Numbers and in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Now, the recorded interview with my next guest from One Soccer doing Forge FC. From Hamilton, Ontario, Alexander Gonguet-Rougic. And here is that recording right now.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the CONCACAF Champions Cup first round, second leg review show as we talk about those clubs in both Liga MX and Canada as we take a look at the second leg between Guadalajara Chivas and, of course, Hamilton Forge from the Canadian Premier League, once again from One Soccer. This is Mr. Alexander Gonguet-Rougic to talk about the match. Welcome back, Alexander, and how are you?
Yeah, I'm doing great this week. Thanks for having me again, Daniel. Great week of Champions Cup action. And, I'm a bit of an unfortunate conclusion for Forge, but overall I think they showed well, so excited to talk about it.
You know, I have to say that they did not disappoint at all. I really thought they had an excellent match, performance-wise, obviously. We know the result didn't go the way that I know you wanted or the way that Hamilton Forge supporters wanted, but still, though, if not for a few bad bounces their way, I mean, I really thought that they performed very well and were strong offensively and defensively.
Yeah, I think for the most part, they... Once again, like in leg one, they showed what they can be, how they want to play. I think they'd have to be encouraged by the lack of fear they had of just wanting to play on the ball, wanting to make things happen. Perhaps maybe, you know, sometimes playing out the back, they made some mistakes. Chivas were able to press them, but you can only commend wanting to play that way, because I think long-term having that sort of commitment to an identity will only pay off as you get used to these sorts of scenarios. So that can be easy, like you mentioned, and like one, to just go out there and adjust and try to hold on. But for Forge, they view this as a valuable chance to test themselves against the best, to prove that they can go out against top Mexican opposition and play their way in and be competitive. And I think overall they'll look from this experience and take a lot of learning moments, just, you know, how things, for example, in this road, like how the environment really can affect you, how the crowd, how teams will press you, how sometimes some of the mistakes you might make get a bit amplified, but they can be happy with the philosophy, I think, they employed in the match.
You know, I really have to commend Bobby Cimarrontas because, you know, he gets his players ready to play. He gets them going. And we all know it's probably preseason or not even preseason. Maybe they're just training at the moment. But still, though, how these players get up for these matches because of what Bobby has done for them has just been incredible. And I really feel he's a real leader of men in that technical area for Hamilton Forge.
Yeah, I mean, look, heading into year six, it's tough sometimes as a coach to keep your message going across for that long, right? Sometimes even great coaches after 4 or 5 years, you can kind of hit a wall, but telling that last year they won a championship in such impressive fashion in the playoffs, that they're able to qualify for this, and that heading into this year, despite missing some key absences, some signings that have players that have departed the club, despite all that's going on around him, heck, all these rumors linking him to the Canada job, it's just been business as usual. They've been playing the Forge way, and that's a credit to the philosophy he's implemented from the ground up there, with, of course, with Sigma, like we mentioned last week. So, yeah, it's a huge credit to him. I think the big thing is that they've been able to do this with some newer faces. I think it's great that, like, a Kevon Tavernier comes on and scores because he's a youngster they're going to have to lean on this year. You look like a Kadeem Kane coming off the bench and really impressing another youngster. You look at some of these other players like Garvin Matusula having to play a bigger role with Amandrik Carr, James Gunn. Alessandro Hojiabopor just growing every year. I think it's a credit to Smirnotis' system that just those faces step up, get dropped into roles, and he sets them up to be able to play that forge way.
If I can ask you this, I mean, we all know Borjan is probably towards the twilight of his career with the national team. I believe Crepeau is probably next in line, distinct. Claire, I believe that's in Minnesota, and Dane, obviously, maybe he's third string or second string once Borjan retires. But, you know, to me, Christopher Colongo did not look out of place once again. I mean, I really thought, outside of the blunders from bad bounces, do you feel maybe he's definitely a future keeper down the pipeline for the Canadian men's national team?
I mean, look, it's a long way away, but for a young goalkeeper, it's tough to get minutes, pro minutes as a young goalkeeper. So for him to show well as he did, he can only be encouraged by what his ceiling could be. And there's certainly a history of young goalkeepers moving on from the Canadian Premier League. I think the big one is Jonathan Sirois, former goalkeeper of the year winner who went to CF Montreal. He is very much in that discussion now to become a Borjan replacement. For Colongo, he'll just, hopefully we'll have to see what happens if, with the Tristan Henry looking unlikely to return. Will Forge trust Colongo to step up and fill the big shoes that Henry will have left behind after five successful seasons with Forge, or will they go elsewhere? I think a performance like this will maybe, lean towards the former. Okay, seeing that Colongo can respond to this sorts of opposition. I thought he did really well, like you mentioned. He had an early mistake in the game, yet he responded and made some great saves. Calm down his distribution. That can be tough for a young goalkeeper. So definitely something where hopefully he can build off this performance and get good minutes because, yeah, anytime a young goalkeeper is playing, it's something where that we don't often see that. Sometimes it takes a little later in a career for a player to get regular minutes as a goalkeeper. So no reason why he can't potentially vault this into something down the road with Canada, although that's been one area that Canada's done a relatively good job at in the past from the days of Craig Forrest to now is that They do have a decent collection of shot stoppers in their mix.
Yeah, they really do. And it looks like there'll be more coming in once again. And hopefully the Canadian Premier League will keep on growing with more clubs and, of course, better players and better keepers and other positionals there as well. As we said before, bad bounce in the eighth minute. Eric Gutierrez converted to make it 1-0 in the second leg. That was 4-1 on aggregate. And then in the second half, I thought fantastic save by Colongo on Jose Castillo. But as we said, the rebound was headed home in 62nd minute, unfortunately. But I will say this. I thought Kevon Tavernier's goal in second half stoppage time was just a beauty of a shot, absolutely, from the long-range rebound that he buried. And he's going to be with the under-20 team in the qualification rounds, correct?
Yes, and yeah, he's been called up, and he's just a fun fact. You wouldn't believe it based on how he took the goal. That was his first professional goal, but certainly a special moment for the 17-year-olds. He also represented Canada at the U-17 World Cup last fall. We played a decent amount of minutes, so he's gotten himself embedded into the Canadian youth system.
Hmm. Very cool, very cool. And that's my hope, of course, for Canada to keep on growing and keep on moving in the positive direction and everything. Let me ask you this, and obviously I'm assuming the Premier League in Canada starts around, what, March? Is it early March? Is it maybe late March or is it beginning of April? You would know more than I would, obviously, when the season starts, but has there been like concerns or complaints of some sort from Canadian soccer fans that maybe either the Premier League in Canada should start earlier, or do you feel that maybe CONCACAF should move up the start of this competition a little later?
Yeah, it's tough because I think ideally it is something that is a concern that has been broached because just weather, due to weather, the final last year was late October, and the first game of the season is early April. That is a long layoff. Coaches aren't the biggest fans of it. Players aren't the biggest fans. But it's also reality where in the sporting market, summer games are always going to be the hotter sell. So you want to maintain a calendar like that. And then there's just the reality that for some places like Calgary, where, of course, there's cavalry, you know, sometimes in March and April it'll be snowing. It'll be minus 5, minus 10. And I know that's a battle that MLS has also dealt with, but I guess in that regard, they're helped by the fact that they can always just, you know, give maybe a little more games in the fall and spring to teams from Florida, teams from California. Whereas in Canada, you don't even really have that luxury because, yeah, Vancouver and you know, on the Atlantic coast, it's still a bit milder than what you might see in Prairie, Alberta, or, you know, somewhere in the greater Toronto area. But it's still wet. It's still, you know, not ideal weather for fans and for players. But I do wonder if we maybe see something where it starts a little earlier, like a March or a February, and sometimes maybe they bite the bullet a bit and go for more of a November end date. Because it is definitely something where I think they realize that having such a long off season isn't you know, the most beneficial, especially in terms of keeping buzz and keeping everyone engaged. And then as for CONCACAF, I think that's something that I'm sure that they'll hear from MLS teams as well, because seeing it would be a huge disadvantage for these MLS teams coming in smack dab in the preseason, like the Whitecaps were, the other Canadian representative. I think that's something where between the CPL teams, of course, it'll be tough because Liga MX will be kind of nearing the end of their Clausura season if they start a bit later, but it could be beneficial for the competition itself if they found a way to make an April or a May start time, if they can find a way to align the schedule to ensure the games aren't too congested.
No, I agree with you there. I think at least I would love for seeing the opening round start maybe beginning of March instead of beginning of February. But then again, that's another discussion for another time, unfortunately. But still, though, where does Forge go from here? I mean, we all know there's another Canadian Premier League season about to start. But, you know, how much longer can they do this, just continue to have moments, you know, in their season where you think that one minute they're out of it, but out of nowhere they make magic happen and they continue to win championship after championship and qualifying for the Champions Cup here. Where do they go from here?
Yeah, I think they still have another big season ahead of them. I mean, it's funny to think they've played two huge games, another next competitive match isn't for another 2 months, but this will just give them a chance to prepare. But I think they're still well set up. Yeah, they lost Mandrakar James, one of the best center backs in the league last year, in my opinion. Yeah, they lost Rubens Pacias, one of the best strikers in the league's history. He signed with, you know, Nashville today, their first team. So it's a great story that he was able to move on. Looks like they're going to lose Tristan Henry, you know, reigning goalkeeper of the year champion. But at the same time, this Forge team, like, they just, you look, they still have quality. You got Tristan Borges, former league MVP. You got Kyle Becker, former league MVP and had one of his best seasons last year. You got Alessandro Hojabapur, who continues to grow and be a force, one of the best at his position. I think Garvin Matusla is super underrated among CPL center backs. You got someone like Kwasi Poku, who I think has oodles of potential and can really step up. This year, Taron Campbell is the league's all-time leading goal scorer. David Chouinard, that's just wild to think that they lose such key regulars, yet I'm going through this roster and you just see quality at every position. I don't think they're done yet either. They're going to make some signings. Of course, they had a Betty Batabanga, who they brought in late last year, who really impressed. I think they're going to, they've also made some other signings already, but I think with this 2 month period, they're going to shore up at center back. They might potentially either, you know, stick with Kolongo and goal or look there and add to what's already an impressive roster. So based on all that, especially if Smirnotis returns, this is a team that's going to go for that league and playoff double, and there's every reason why they can believe in being able to do it this year.
If you don't mind me asking you this, obviously Tim Hortons Stadium in Hamilton, Ontario, and they share it with the Tiger Cats of the Canadian Football League, and it, you know, it's a great home field advantage for them, obviously, but do you know if there's going to be any pipelines possibly of building a soccer stadium for themselves and maybe move out, or they're just going to remain there until forever and ever?
I think they're definitely going to remain there long term. I mean, it just makes sense. Their owner, Bob Young, who also owns the Tiger Cats, and he's been a huge driving force behind the CPL itself, you know, not just Forge. Because of that, I think they're going to stay at Tim Hortons Field. And I think that's good because it gives something for them to shoot for. That Lithing, it's, you know, it's promising that last year at the final they were able to get 12,000-13,000 into that stadium. It shows that, okay, they're pushing towards getting bigger and bigger crowds and having that ceiling to shoot for, especially that the Tiger Cats always sell out well. They're so well-regarded in Hamilton. I think with Forge's success and what they've been doing, I think they're slowly starting to get some of that recognition in the market. So it's something where, yeah, maybe at this, in the short term, you'd like a 6,000-7,000-seat stadium. I think the Halifax Wanderers have provided the perfect template of why that's great, but also as the Wanderers have come to realize themselves with all the sell-ups they're having, you know, sometimes it's okay to have that ceiling to grow, especially if you can use it right. So hopefully for Forge, there can be a reality that within the next 2 to 3 years, they're constantly getting 10,000 every week, and they can continue to be a big pillar in this league on and off the field.
Absolutely. Well, unfortunately, Forge is out, but there's another CPL team ready to go in the MLS rounds, and that is Cavalry FC based out of Calgary, and hopefully they can make some noise and they can make an upset here in the first round of the CONCACAF Champions Cup. But Alexander, as always, thank you very much for joining me tonight, and hope to talk to you next week, and you have a good evening. Thanks again.
Yeah, likewise, Dan. Always a pleasure.
Alexander Gonguet-Rougic from One Soccer talking about Hamilton Forge as we are getting ready to talk more about the CONCACAF Champions Cup, the Liga MX first round and the second leg review as we get ready to talk about everything going on with this tournament. Now, my next guest, just waiting for him to give me a call, and that is the one and only Charlie Assam from FMF State of Mind of SB Nation, as we're going to review all the clubs involved in Liga MX and getting ready for this one as we go ahead and talk about it. Just waiting for Charlie to call in and get ready to talk about these games. Now, and once again, the one and only Charlie Assam from SB Nation's FMF State of Mind. Welcome back, Charlie, and how are you, sir?
Hey, Dan, pretty good. Thanks for having me on again, and a pleasure to be here with you.
That's great to have you on here. Before we talk about these games, let's just go ahead quickly. Tragedy struck, sadly, in Liga MX. If you can just inform us about the situation that happened with Diego Chavez, what happened?
Yeah, it was absolutely unfortunate. Reports say it was a high speed collision late at night, I believe somewhere around midnight. Just really, you know, really tragic story out of the border city. Had, you know, much promise in the league, just kind of, you know, getting his career, underway. It's absolutely a tragic story to hear, and you know, hopefully one we can all learn from. I mean, not clear yet, you know, what the circumstances surrounding it were, but it's always unfortunate when we hear these types of stories, not just in Liga MX, but in any sports league, you know, around the world.
Absolutely. And, prayers to and condolences to his family and loved ones, obviously, and to all the fans. I believe he was playing for FC Juarez, and very sorry for the fan base over there. They couldn't watch him play for them, and very sad to hear that. So sending our condolences to Chavez's family as well and to all his friends and loved ones. Let's go ahead, Charlie, to recap all these games. Guadalajara, gotta say, I thought Forge actually did well against Guadalajara, but Chivas took advantage of two good bounces their way, obviously, to get the goals to win this one 2-1 in the second leg, 5-2 on aggregate. But you know, give credit to Forge; they never gave up in the entire match.
Yeah, that's a good point to make there. Both goals come, I think they're very circumstantial. That being said, I also believe it's a prize for Chivas in terms of, you know, continuing to insist and keeping the pressure on forged. So yeah, for sure, circumstantial goals, lucky bounces. Had that initial goal not gone in, I think the game could have gotten a little bit more interesting, because a little later in the half, Forge do have a couple approaches that come very close to going in, specifically one long-distance shot that was kind of bending, you know, making kind of trying to make its way in. So, credit to Forge for, I mean, they never stopped fighting. However, I also do want to add, I do feel they, you know, all their players in general looked, I would say, a step or two behind the Chivas players. And I'll go back to what I mentioned last week. They seem a little bit out of rhythm still. And I'll repeat the same again. It would be interesting to see this Forge team if they were in the middle of their, you know, regular season. I think we could have a bit of a different outcome.
I agree with you there, Charlie. Well, I will say this, though. I want to say Jose Castillo. I mean, that was a damn good goal, even though, you know, bad bounce for Forge. But I have to give credit to Jose Castillo. I mean, he made a great opening shot. And even though the save was made from the Forge goalkeeper from Colongo, you got to give Castillo a lot of credit staying with that ball and heading it inside the near post.
Yeah, absolutely. He stays with the play, and I think credit to the entire Chivas strikers and you know forwards and just offense in general. I think they all were very involved. I love Cade Cowell's involvement again. I think he actually looked a step ahead of everyone, and I love the fact that it wasn't just shooting but also crossing. He created plays along the sidelines, you know, fed his teammates the ball as well. So he's not just looking to score goals. He's also fully involved in play creation. So I love what I'm seeing there. Another positive point, in terms of what Chivas did, is they showed a great ability to lull the game to sleep. I don't know if you'll agree with me here, Dan, but I think that with their passing – you know, their passing game, I think Fernando Gago, you know, Chivas manager, he's putting his stamp on this team, you know, trying to show this good game management that they can have. So they pass the ball around. They did this in the first leg as well, where they'll just have these, you know, prolonged periods of possession with the ball, where they'll just pass it around and just kind of lull the game to sleep. And I think they did the same thing here in this second leg. It helps for them not to get too worn out. They knew that they were playing against a rival who was a bit inferior in terms of rhythm, maybe quality somewhat. So they played to their advantage there. And yeah, just I think a very good all-around game by Chivas. Good stuff from Chivas, but definitely a much tougher road ahead with America coming up next, the Clásico Nacional. So it'll be interesting to see how much of this good play they can transfer once they hit America, you know, in a few weeks here.
No, actually, I do agree with you. I mean, that's always in my mind a good manager right there. I think that what he did was the correct thing to do. I mean, the truth of the matter is this. If they took their chances better, the scoreline would have been a lot better for Chivas in the match, especially in the second leg, because, yeah, you know, the three goals that they got in the first leg over in Hamilton were tremendous. And I agree with you. Cade Cowell has really fitted in very nicely. It didn't take him that long at all to fit in. I think he fits
right
in very well with what Guadalajara wants to play. And the manager is giving him definitely a lot to work with, and he's fit in exceptionally well.
Right, and let's keep in mind that they still have Chicharito up and coming. He's still not fully recovered, so I believe they had said they were expecting a March debut at some point. So just to think that he will also be involved at some point, I'm not saying, you know, title contender yet, but definitely exciting times ahead for Chivas. If they're showing this so far, you know, without Chicharito, and then, you know, in these couple games, you know, no Alan Mozo, no Victor Guzman, no Roberto Alvarado, these key players to their to their, you know, scheme. It'll be very interesting to see what happens once, you know, all these players are fit in the lineup plus Chicharito. So yeah, interesting times ahead for Chivas.
Absolutely. Let's go to the next match, and that's Tigres versus Vancouver. And that was a 3-0 victory for Tigres. Now, I want to ask you a question here because, look, they got the necessary results. They got the necessary aggregate advantage. But did you feel confident with Tigres playing against Vancouver, or did you feel like there's something wrong here?
I did not feel confident. I mean, obviously, we have to just say right off the bat, Tigres are one of the top, I would say top three CONCACAF teams over the past, I don't know, 5 to 10 years maybe. So you're talking about very difficult team in Tigres, right? That being said, however, Vancouver showed, you know, a lot of fight, a lot of spirit, and they have a lot of quality players there. So I thought this could have been anyone's game. And to be honest with you, this Tigres Vancouver series and the Toluca Herediano series, they were the two series that worried me the most out of these initial five Liga MX matches. So I was not confident at all coming into this one, especially, you know, Tigres have shown that they've been a good home team for sure, but you know, they have been let down at home as well in certain defining games. So definitely wasn't confident.
So let me throw this at you. If Tuca Ferretti was still the manager at Tigres, would there have been chairs thrown and lockers damaged to get the players ready and be more clinical at the second half?
I mean, maybe in a sense, just considering how much of a perfectionist Tuca Ferretti is. That being said, I also think that Siboldi did what Tuca Ferretti would have done, like the initial game plan. So, you know, the first game, Tigres come out, the first leg, excuse me, they come out with a back line of four, and I'll use your exact words, they shredded them like Swiss cheese. So what does Siboldi do? So what does he do? He comes out with a back line of five. He inserts Samir in the middle. I mean, Samir is just a beast of a player back there. He just cannot be passed. He's so good, so strong. It's so difficult to get past him. So a great insertion there in Samir. And then, of course, he has his two defensive midfielders right in front of him in Gorriarán and, of course, Carioca. So you have, you know, excellent ball control, great defensive discipline there. So he has his three center backs plus his two defensive central midfielders. So there was no way they were going to get past, you know, that middle section. Again, they forced Vancouver to play on the sidelines. And I think that kind of forced Vancouver, they looked really comfortable playing down the middle in the first leg. So I think that kind of forced them a little bit, and they looked I did notice they were a bit uncomfortable, at least, you know, noticeably more uncomfortable than they were in the first game in terms of attacking.
Very true. I agree with you there. But, like, you know, look, Siboldi did the right thing. He made his changes in the second half. He made his adjustments, his tactical changes, and he got three fantastic goals coming from his side to win it 4-1 on aggregate 3-0 in the second leg. Club America winning 2-0 at their temporary home, because I did not know that they were reformatting or at least refurbishing the Estadio Azteca again to make it ready for the World Cup in 2026. So they went over to the Ciudad de los Deportes, but 2-0 in the second leg, 3-2 on aggregate. I thought this was a great match. I thought Real Esteli at least tried to – well, I shouldn't say – well, they did try, obviously. You know, they stuck it in there, and they tried to match Club America. And I thought there was that one moment I thought they were going to go into a fight or something on that one tackle in the second half. But thankfully, that did. Thankfully, cooler heads prevailed, obviously. But still, though, that was a great match. You know, I know Esteli did not get the result that they were looking for, but I thought they tried to match Club America with the intensity that they were able to do.
Yeah, I mean, you know, intensity-wise, they were there. But I do want to say they looked like a totally different team from the start. They seemed really nervous with the ball. You know, they lost a ton of balls in their defensive zone, and they were missing wide-open passes to their teammates. And we're talking, this was within the first 15 to 20 minutes when America was full-on pressure until they finally, you know, suffocated Esteli enough to get that first goal. And after they get that first goal, which is what they needed to move on, you notice, you know, manager Jardine kind of, you know, gives out the instruction for them to sit back, to kind of wait for Esteli. And they kind of managed the game. It was more game management. Same thing, you know, they're playing a midweek match. They have a difficult matchup tomorrow. I believe they're playing Pachuca. And Pachuca are actually the other Liga MX club who are already through to the round of 16, CONCACAF Champions Cup. So a difficult game there that they have tomorrow. So for sure, I think it's clear it was in Jardine's mind. Let's get the goal we need, and let's kind of, you know, be smart with our, you know, with how, you know, how much effort we're exerting here.
No, absolutely. And, of course, the brilliant goal from Jonathan Rodriguez in the 18th and another brilliant goal from Alejandro Zendejas in the 54th. And that was absolutely wonderful to watch. Obviously, the next one I want to talk to, because, I mean, it's really Monterrey being Monterrey. Let's just be honest. Comunicaciones had nothing. I mean, I know they played and they battled, but still, though, you're down 4-1 on aggregate. You got destroyed already, you know, basically 21 minutes in between goals. Hector Moreno, Jesus Corona makes it 2-0 already in the match, and that's already 6-1. It's 7-1 on aggregate. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, there's nothing here. Comunicaciones just, you know, walks out like a lamb.
Yeah, they do. No resistance, you know, whatsoever on their part. It was an easy walkover for Monterrey. Moreno scores, I believe, in the ninth or tenth minute. So, you know, if there was any doubt at all, he immediately puts that to rest at that point. And then just as, you know, a couple notes from Rayados here, just to put it out there. It was good to see, you know, Tecatito, Rodrigo Aguirre, Brandon Vasquez, to see these guys involved. Tecatito and Aguirre are coming off kind of difficult stretches here where they haven't been playing their best. So that's good to see them kind of get in the mix. And then Brandon Vasquez scores. I believe Aguirre didn't score, but he was involved, I think, in that last goal that Brandon Vasquez scores. So he provides the assist. And then he also had a, you know, couple more shots during the game, which were close to going in. So just to see him playing well and kind of being involved on offense is important, because he's been getting booed a ton from the Monterrey fan base, and we've seen what he can do. If he can get back to his prime level, he will be a huge asset for Monterrey. So that is exactly what they need, and I think that was a smart decision on manager Tano Ortiz's part to keep him in there and give him a chance to really start, you know, getting minutes and you know, trying to contribute and getting that confidence back. And then just as a one last comment here, I just want to repeat what I said last week, because I truly do believe Rayados got lucky in that first leg. They ended up scoring the two goals toward the end, but, you know, had things could have gone very differently had Comunicaciones scored, you know, one or two more of those opportunities in the first leg. So this big advantage that they came back home with allowed Rayados to play an alternate squad. They were able to rotate accordingly. They got rest in for really key players, you know, in preparation for their Toluca clash this weekend. So just important to note there that things could have been very different. They could have been forced to use a much more serious squad, if you want to put it that way, like America was forced to use in Tigres. Had the result in the first leg been a little bit different, which it definitely could have. But yeah, I agree with you, Dan. They swept Comunicaciones out of the stadium last night, for sure.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. Before we get to the last match, I want to ask you this quick question, though. You know, DeMarcus Beasley was the last U.S.-American player to play in Liga MX. Now, for the league, you have Alejandro Zendejas. You've got Cade Cowell and Brandon Vazquez. And, of course, he scored that big third goal in the match to make it 3-0 against Comunicaciones. What does it mean to you to see U.S. men's national team players actually coming down to Mexico and being a part of the FMF, of Liga MX?
I honestly think it's huge. I think it's been a long time coming. The U.S., especially in terms of offense, have shown over the past, 10, 15, 20 years, I think they've shown, some great offensive sparks, and they've had really good players that have caused issues for, specifically speaking in the matchups with Mexico, with the Mexican national team. I think they've had some very, very good players of late. Obviously Christian Pulisic, doesn't need mentioning. He's been a stud in Europe since he's been over there. But I mean, they've had a bunch of really talented offensive players, and I think it was just a matter of time. And I think it's also good for them. It's not just good for Liga MX in terms of bringing, more talent offensive-wise, but it's good for them also because I think defenses in Liga MX are tougher to figure out than MLS. I think MLS can still take it a step further in terms of defense. That's just my take from what I've observed. And I think it's also good for them. It presents a good challenge for them in their careers. And, some of them who can't make the jump straight to Europe, I think it is an important growth for them to try to prove their talent in Mexico.
I agree with you there. And now we go to the surprise, the shock, and the, oh my God, what the hell just happened? I'm absolutely flabbergasted. I mean, look, I don't know if this is Toluca being Toluca, but you win in Costa Rica 2-1 in the first leg and you get the two away goals. You add on two more at home in the first half and it's 4-1 at aggregate. And you're thinking you've killed off Herediano, and then that happened. I could not believe Herediano came back and got not just a victory, but three away goals to win the away goal rule and to end it on a 4-4 draw. But the away goals rule was just unreal how they won this one. What does Toluca tell you? I mean, what do the fans in Toluca tell you? What does Renato Paiva tell you how this whole thing imploded in front of them?
Yeah, couldn't have said it better. It's just amazing. I mean, you're sitting there watching the game, and I mean, there's no way. You've got, I think, what was it? Less than 40 minutes, around 35 minutes to go. It's a three-goal difference. I mean, Toluca, came out the second half, the first 10 minutes of the second half, they're still dominating the game. It's like there's no way you could have ever predicted this would happen. It's just incredible. And I think the key to the game, you just mentioned it. It's manager Renato Paiva. I think his game plan failed him again, just like in the first leg. Instead of pressing on the gas, taking advantage of the fact they had one extra player, he decided to sit back with the one goal lead, and then they get a second goal, and then they sit back again. And what happens when you decide to sit back and let the other team grow is any little mistake will cost you, and that's what happened at the end of the first leg, right? So same thing here. So he takes a 2-0 lead, and I really can't blame him all that much. I think everybody, I don't think there's a single person who would have actually guessed Herediano would come back. But they have a great offensive scheme going in the first half. And what happens is at halftime, he takes out Maxi Araujo, who's on the left, and he takes out Robert Morales, who is his center forward, right, his striker. So he takes out two key pieces on offense to start the second half. And he does that thinking the game is over. He's seeing it as an opportunity to rest his starters. You know, he takes out Alexis Vega, you know, I think halfway through the second half as well. So he kind of, you know, just dismisses the game in a sense, thinking it's over. And I think that's what ends up losing him the game. Toluca was nowhere near, you know, efficient offensively as they were in the first half. So I believe it was those substitutions and the fact of them, you know, just kind of thinking the game was over. I think that's the message, you know, because players also get the message from the coach, you know, or from the manager. Whenever he makes substitutions, they get the message with substitutions as well. And if they get that message, that's also in their heads as well, right? The game is over. Let's just try and see this thing out. But absolutely the surprise. I mean, I don't know if to go as far as the year in terms of CONCACAF with such, I mean, such disparity between these two clubs. No, not taking any credit away from Herediano. They have quality players as well. But Toluca, with these players they have, with their payroll, and with the advantage they had at home, with the height above sea level, there's just no excuse for them to have lost this game.
It's blasphemy, downright blasphemy. That's a shame. That's just.
Yeah. Yeah.
You think you have it in the bag, and then you blow it up.
Yeah, and I just want to reiterate, something I alluded to last week. Tiel Tamirano, the Herediano manager, he Mexican born player. He played in the Mexican national team. He coached for Gallos Blancos de Querétaro not long ago, so he knows Liga MX very well. So, you know, he looked like an absolute genius. The two subs he brought in, Francisco Rodriguez and Joshua Canales, they scored the second and third goals respectively. They defended well as a team, and they knew when to go on the counter, send players up and attack. It was just a great team effort. If Toluca weren't, you know, as inconsistent as they've proven to be over these two games, and they hadn't broken up that offensive scheme in the way they did, there's no way Herediano comes back from this. But, you know, taking advantage of what Toluca stopped doing, full credit to Herediano and Pity Altamirano for figuring out a way to come back from this.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, all I can say, Charlie, is once again, you know, some days you eat the bear and some days the bear eats you. And in this case, it was both.
Absolutely. For sure.
I would not
want to be a Toluca fan right now. I've seen a few videos of these fans, and it's not fun. I'll tell you that. So,
we'll see how they
rebound from this one.
Hopefully they will, but I got a funny feeling this guy is not – they're not going to be happy for a while because they gave up such a great opportunity and they screwed it up. What are you going to do? Charlie, as always, thanks again for joining me. Just rest up for March for round of 16, and we'll see what happens beginning of March, and hopefully it'll be a lot better once Pachuca starts their way in round of 16, so it should be a lot of fun. Thanks again for joining me tonight.
For sure. Thanks for having me on, Dan. A pleasure speaking to you again, and we'll be talking, and you know, come March for sure.
Absolutely.
Thanks so much.
Absolutely. No problem. Have a good night. Charlie Assam from FMF State of Mind of SB Nation. Talk about those clubs from Liga MX as we reviewed that, and just absolutely terrible if you're a Toluca fan down there when you should have had that against Herediano, and you let them back in the match. Just unbelievable. And you get kicked out on away goals 3-2. 3-2 was also the final score in the second leg, 4-4 on aggregate. But I want to thank my guests tonight, Michael McCall from Away from the Numbers, Alexander Gonguet-Rougique from One Soccer in Canada, and of course, Charlie Assam, SB Nation's FMF State of Mind. Join me regular show with Carter Krishnar from World Soccer Talk and my colleague at Beyond the 90. And then the next Friday, reviewing all MLS clubs involved in the CONCACAF Champions Cup, their first round, first leg matches as well. My name is Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you very much for listening to me tonight. I hope you have a very good evening. Take care, so long, and as always, enjoy your football. Thank you. Take care, so long, and bye-bye. Have a good night, everybody.